This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. Now, please welcome to the show my brand new podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer. I am so excited about today's podcast. We are going to learn how we feel things.
How do we feel things?
How we feel things? That is just a crazy question. Who are we going to have on our show to talk to us about that?
Luckily for us, we have an expert in the field, Dr. Theanne Griffith. She is a neuroscientist, so she knows all about it, and she's a children's author, so she is going to be able to explain it to our listeners super great.
Oh, that's so awesome. Welcome to the show, Dr. Theanne. Welcome to the show, Dr. Theanne.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy and excited to be here and excited to talk about our sense of touch.
Yes, exactly. So you're a neuroscientist. What does that mean? Like, what does a neuroscientist do?
I get that question all the time. So a neuroscientist studies our nervous system. And so then I give that answer and people ask, well, what is the nervous system? And so then I explain, we have a brain and a spinal cord, and that makes up what's called our central nervous system. And then we have a whole other nervous system that's made up of what are called sensory neurons. Oh. And those sensory neurons receive information from our external world, like when it's cold outside, those sensory neurons tell you so. Or if a mosquito comes and bites you and you have an itch, those are also your sensory neurons alerting you to your new bug bite. But then also you have sensory neurons inside your body. So when you eat a big old piece of pizza, for example, and you get really full, you have sensory neurons that are attached to your stomach that tell your brain, hey, you know, Dr. Theanne has had enough pizza. Yep, you have a nervous system in your head. You have a nervous system that runs down your back. And then you have a nervous system that covers pretty much every other part of your body.
Wow.
And as a neuroscientist, I study what those nervous systems do and how they send information. Gosh.
I knew that we could feel things with that sense of touch we were talking about. I never put together that we had the same types of neurons going on inside as well. So that's, like you said, how Dr. Theanne knows she's full after eating. How many of those neurons do we have? Are they all over inside like they are outside?
So we don't have as many neurons in our peripheral nervous system as we have in our central nervous system. So as we have in our brain and in our spinal cord, but they literally send, you can think of them as like little antennas. These neurons send little antennas to just about every part of our body. The tip of your toe, your stomach, your heart, your lungs. And guess what? You know, when you drink too much water and you feel like you have to pee?
Yes.
That is also your peripheral nervous system, even in your bladder.
That's so cool.
I've been using that system all day today.
That's when you drink too much water. So this is kind of like what I would call, I guess, an old telephone wires or whatever going through your body. So they're all connected, right? It's not like Bluetooth where it flies through the air, right?
No. So neurons have some really cool parts. And this is pretty much true for just about every neuron. So they have something called a cell body. Uh-huh. And that's where they have all of their DNA and all of the proteins that they make. And then also their, I don't know if our listeners are familiar with mitochondria,
the powerhouse.
Those are also in the cell body. But then neurons have these things that shoot out from them. Okay. And so one of those things is called an axon. It's kind of a weird word, so I'll say it
again.
Sounds
cool.
And axons send information to other neurons. Then neurons also have things called dendrites. Again, another kind of strange word, so I'll say it one more time. Dendrites. You can think of dendrites. They receive signals from other neurons. So from the axons of other neurons, dendrites take in that information and then it gets all translated in the cell body and then it gets sent out through the axon. Now, it's a little bit different for our peripheral nervous system. These neurons usually just have axons. So for example, if you
didn't know that,
your hand, even at the palm of your hand, it is full of tiny little axons from neurons. And those axons travel all the way down your arm to your spinal cord. So for me, I'm kind of tall. That's probably pretty close to a 3-foot axon. Okay.
Wow.
And that goes all the way from your fingertip. It's the same one, all the way to your spinal cord. So when you go and you, let's say, pick up a glass to drink something and you can feel that glass in your hand, that signal is traveling down an axon all the way to some dendrites to another neuron in our spinal cord. It's pretty cool.
Wow. That really is pretty cool. You just blew my mind with that one. Like I said first, you were going to teach us that we didn't know things we knew. I knew I could touch a bottle or a glass and feel it. I did not know that it was connected all the way inside.
Yep.
So as a neurologist, what do you do specifically with this information?
So what I try and understand, right? So the kind of neurons that I'm interested in are called dorsal root ganglion neurons.
That's a big term.
Big fancy name. And you know what we can call it to make it nice and simple?
What?
DRG. So okay. Just call them right. DRG neurons. Those are the ones I study. Now, these neurons send a lot of different kinds of signals. They send signals about temperature. So we know if it's hot or cold outside. Again, they send information about touch. So we know if a friend is giving us a hug or if we're holding something in our hand or even as we're walking, right? Then they also send information about pain. Now, I know we don't really like to feel pain. No one wants to feel pain, but pain is actually really important. We need to know things that will get us hurt and we need to feel a little bit hurt by those things, like maybe touching a knife, right? We can hurt ourselves on a knife. Right? Or scissors. We have to be very careful with those kind of things. So those pain signals are also sent by DRG neuron. And so what I'm really interested in trying to figure out is how does our body and how does our brain know if they're all the same kind of cells that are sending this information, how does our brain decode that? How does our brain know that that one DRG is sending information about pain, whereas this other DRG neuron is sending information about touch?
So how do you do that? Do you actually do experiments with people or do you like dissect things? Or what do you take a look at?
So we tend to study mice because there's a lot of genetic tools. So we can manipulate mice really easily in my lab. And so that's why we study mice. But the technique that I use is really, really cool. So I'm going to give you another piece of fun information.
Oh, okay.
So neurons talk to each other, right? That's pretty much the job of our nervous system, is to send a bunch of signals so our body works properly. Okay. And they use two different kinds of communication. One communication is through chemicals. So neurons release chemicals onto each other, and mm-hmm. that will activate a signal. But then the second form of communication, the signal, is actually electricity.
Yes.
Our neurons talk to each other with electricity. So it's basically like you have fireworks going on in your brain almost all the time. And that's actually where the saying, a light bulb goes off, comes from. Because we literally are using electricity to send signals. So when I clap my hands like this, right, and I felt that, those neurons were activated in my palms and they sent electric signals all the way down my arm, again, to my spinal cord, then to my brain. And my brain was like, oh, that was Thean's palms touching. And so as a neuroscientist, I can use a fancy technique again, another big word, I'm very sorry, but it's called electrophysiology. But all it means is that I can record those electrical signals from neurons and ask how different signals are sent. So it's almost, you can think of it like Morse code. So I'm going to give you an example, and this is just made up. This is not necessarily how real neurons would sound. But you can imagine, let's say that a temperature neuron would sound like a lot of fast signals, whereas maybe a touch neuron is more like doop, 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 doop. So slightly slower signals. Or maybe they group their signals differently. So maybe they kind of, what we call in neuroscience, they burst. Maybe they go, and then they stop for a little bit. And then they go, and then they stop for a little bit. Or maybe they burst really quickly, like over and over again. But you see all of those fun, different sounds and signals?
Oh my gosh.
That is how neurons talk to each other. And so I'm trying to understand how different kinds of DRG neurons send their signals with the hope that we can decode how our body reads the world around us, right? How we know when we go outside that it's cold or that it's hot. That's really important information, right? Imagine if you went out, like, let's say for our listeners in Chicago. So I used to live in Chicago for about 5 years, and it is very cold in, let's say, February.
Yes, it is. I've been there. Lots of snow.
Lots. Now imagine if you didn't know it was cold outside, or your body was sending the signals incorrectly, and you thought it was warmer, and you didn't dress properly. You could get pretty sick, or you could get hypothermia, or you could get frostbite. So it's really important that we understand how our nervous system sends different kinds of signals.
I gotta tell you, the way you described the sounds of different neurons, it clicked in my head, no pun intended with a sound in my brain, but it clicked in my head that I now understand how the brain figures out the different signals between hungry or cold or a friend hugging you kind of thing. As you were describing that, my mind went to, as a scientist, you are learning about this to help people. My mind went to, I'm kind of fascinated with how long people live. So 100 years ago, people lived 30 years, about 25 years less than they do now. So the average lifespan was maybe 55 or 60. Now it's 75 to 80. Does our understanding of neurons and the nervous system help us live better?
Definitely, definitely. So a lot of things happen as we age to our nervous system, right? And it happens differently to different people. So not everyone ages the same, and not everyone's nervous system ages the same. Some people lose their memory. So a big, big important job of our brain is to remember things and help us learn.
Sure.
And that requires a lot of energy, a lot of mitochondria.
Yes, it does.
It does, right? And you know, after using something like our brain for so long, as we get older, sometimes it just doesn't work as well. And so we're really trying hard to figure out how we can help people. And I'm just using this as an example, who are getting older, who have trouble remembering things. So understanding how our brain works normally and how we normally remember things when we're young and healthy can help us then figure out what's going on as we get older and our brain stops working in the same way that it did when we were younger. And you know, something actually very similar happens in our peripheral nervous system. So as we get older, especially our sense of touch tends to become less strong. And that's actually a reason why sometimes, like our grandparents or older people in our life, sometimes they have falls, right? Sometimes they fall down and hurt themselves.
Oh.
And you know why? Is because as we're walking, our feet are touching the ground. And that touching then connects to a circuit, or you can say like a signaling pathway,
right,
that helps us balance. But if we don't feel as well, then we don't balance as well. And then we can fall more easily, especially if something maybe is even just a little bit slippery or if our foot doesn't land quite properly. So it's really important, not just for our brain, but, you know, for our peripheral nervous system too. And I'll give you one more quick fact about something that can go a little bit haywire in our peripheral nervous system. So there's something, and this again happens as we get older, and it can also happen as a consequence of taking certain medications. And right. also people with diabetes get this, and it's called neuropathy. And yes. I know I keep throwing out all of these big words. I'm so sorry.
But you're explaining them well, so we're good.
So neuropathy is when you have damage to your peripheral neurons, these sensory neurons. So for example, remember how I was telling you it's really important that we can feel hot and cold?
Right.
So some people with damage to their peripheral neurons, you can imagine like a nice summer day, it's really hot outside, you open the freezer to go get a popsicle, and all of that cold air rushes out. That can actually hurt people who have peripheral neuropathy because they're oh. very sensitive to temperature. So instead of feeling cold, it feels pain. You see oh. those signals get mixed up,
oh.
right? And so something that normally would feel maybe even nice, maybe that cool air on a hot
on day, a hot day, yes.
Nice, right? But when you have a neuropathy, that can hurt. And the same thing can go for a hug, where a hug instead of feeling good can hurt. And then sometimes you can even get just random sensations that are very uncomfortable. Like, you know, when you, let's say you're sitting down for a long time and your foot falls asleep and it gets all tingly.
Yes.
Sure.
Well, people with nerve damage feel that all the time. And it's oh, not cool. so bad if you feel it for 20 seconds, but imagine feeling that all day long.
That would be annoying, right? Because when your hand falls asleep, you just want to shake it until you can feel it again. It's very annoying.
Exactly. Yeah. So understanding again how our peripheral nerves work under normal, healthy conditions can help us help people who have damage to their peripheral nerves.
So this is just the coolest thing. So I just have to ask though, how did you get into this? Like, have you loved science as a kid? Or, you know, as a kid, you were like, oh, I love the brain. How did you get into all of this?
I have pretty much always loved science, at least as far back as I can remember. At first, I wanted to be a veterinarian. Then I wanted to be a doctor. And then at some point in high school, I kind of shifted gears and was like, you know, maybe I could go into research. And when I was 16, I took an AP biology class, and mm-hmm. that's where I was introduced to neuroscience. And it was pretty much no looking back from there.
So 16, this is what I'm going to do.
And here I am. I won't say, let's say 20-ish years later.
Yeah, we don't have to give our age on this show.
Thanks to your AP bio teacher.
Yes.
Oh, awesome.
I do wonder. Was your AP bio teacher the one that taught you the
She did not. But you know what she did introduce me to? Hi, Mrs. Piskor. She introduced me to action potentials. And so action potentials are those electrical signals that I was telling you about. Remember how I said that neurons talk with electricity?
Yes.
Well, those signals, if you just look at one of them, not the brrr, but just brrr, that is an action potential. And that, you can think of it like the currency of our nervous system. That's how they communicate. Yeah. That's how they talk.
What a great analogy.
And so I just was fascinated by that. And I was like, I want to know more about action potentials. This is just too cool. And here I am studying them as for a living.
Very cool. So we were just talking a little bit about people that have damage. And as we age, our experience changes. Are there ways of repairing or fixing that? It sounds like science fiction, but I feel like you're about to change that perception as well.
I hope so. That's what we're trying very hard to do in my lab.
Okay.
But I will say it's hard. It's a slow process. Science takes a long time, unfortunately. I wish that it would happen faster. But in order to do science properly and correctly, you know, it takes a while. And so there are a lot of people working to develop new drugs that can help treat these kinds of conditions and diseases. But unfortunately, we don't have a lot of good options right now. But like I said, there are literally researchers across the globe trying to answer these questions. So we just have to keep supporting them.
Exactly.
And we will get there. It just takes a little bit longer than we want.
So we also want to talk about, because you're also a children's author. So you took your love of the brain and you turned it into books for kids. And we've talked before because, you know, I did the Brain Games book, which is really cool. But tell us a little bit about the book series that you created.
Yeah, so my book series is called The Magnificent Makers, and you can think of it as a modern day magic school bus. So these are chapter books for readers about 7 to 10. And in this series, we follow best friends Pablo and Violet as they go on these out of this world science adventures into a magical laboratory called the Maker Maze. And so in each book, they cover a different science topic in the Maker Maze. So the Maker Maze creates a challenge for them, and each challenge has 3 levels, and they have to complete all 3 of those levels in 120 Maker Minutes in order to be invited back. And they're guided on their adventure by a kind of kooky scientist who runs the lab, and her name is Dr. Chris. And so, like I said, each book covers a different science topic as well as kind of a life lesson. For example, book 1 is called How to Test a Friendship, and that's all about ecosystems and food chains. But we also talk about friendships, because friendships are kind of like ecosystems and everyone has their place. Yep. And that was something that Pablo had to learn a little bit in book 1.
I think we all have to learn about that.
Exactly. So yeah, there are currently 3 books available in the series, and book 4, which is called The Great Germ Hunt, will come out in October. And that's about one of the topics that's probably on everyone's mind.
Oh yeah.
Germs and how to stop spreading them.
Yes.
That is wonderful. And talk about, was book number 4 inspired by the pandemic, or was it already in the works beforehand? The way you've described some of these topics, they are so understandable now that I can imagine this book 4 is just going to be gold.
I'm so excited. So I actually wrote this during the pandemic. It was very
why not, right?
Good to have a hobby.
Inspired. It was kind of, the timing was, I was just getting ready to figure out what future books could be when we went into lockdown. It was literally where I was in my author journey. And so it was kind of obvious that we had to talk about germs. And it was super important, right? Kids need to have a good understanding of germs and not necessarily be afraid of them, but have a respect for them.
Yes.
And respect them by understanding them and learning about them. And also in this book, we introduce a new character to the series. Her name is Aria, and she's disabled as well as medically fragile. So germs are really scary for her.
Oh, yeah.
And we talk about that a little bit in the book and why some people need extra protection from germs.
Yeah, that's great. Well, this has been so awesome. On the show, though, we like to have our listeners get a challenge. So do you have a challenge about neuroscience that our listeners could do, Dr. Theann?
Definitely. So this is one of my favorite ones to do, and it goes back to our sense of touch. So remember how I said we have nerves that go all through our body, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, in some parts of our body, we have more nerves than others. And a good example of that is going to be our fingertips. Yep. So you can use this fun little test to demonstrate that in vivo. What is a good way to say in vivo? Live, that's the word.
Live.
Too much science for me, sorry. Anyway, so what you can do is you can take some popsicle sticks and some toothpicks, and then you can glue the toothpicks to the popsicle sticks at different distances apart from each other. So you just take 2 toothpicks per popsicle stick. And so maybe you can glue them like a centimeter apart, and then maybe you can glue them an inch apart, or maybe even a millimeter apart if you're really good at measuring. And then once they're dry, you can prick yourself very lightly, right? No, we're not making weapons here. Just very lightly prick yourself on your fingertip and say, can I feel 2 pricks, or do I just feel 1? Oh. And in some places, you'll be able to feel 2. And in other places, it'll just feel like 1. And that's because there are more nerves in places like your fingertips than there are in, like, let's say your bicep or your arm, for example. There are less nerves there because we don't need as much information to be sent from the skin of our bicep as we do from the skin on our fingertips, right? Like we don't pick up our cups normally with our biceps. We usually use our fingertips if we have them, right?
Yes.
And so that's why we have more nerves there, because we need more. And you can demonstrate it really well with that little activity.
Well, that is fabulous. So I want everybody to try this. And then, of course, go to our website, because we're going to have more information about Dr. Theann there, maybe some more things you can do. And also her website, which will take you so you can find out all about her books. But if you do the challenge, be sure to tag us on our social media, which is at KidSolve on Twitter and Instagram. Because we'd love to either see what you made or give us an example of where you could feel on your body the most. Wouldn't that be cool?
That'd be so cool. I would love to see that. And I'll quickly say that if you're looking for more science activities, all of my books come with two activities in the back matter. So it's great for at-home learning. And fun fact, Pablo and Violet actually do one of those activities in the book.
Very
so
cool.
So the learning doesn't have to stop when you're done reading.
Yay. I am definitely doing this one with my 9-year-old daughter at home. She loves doing science experiments. And when I get home, I'm going to tell her that I have a more fun way of playing the game Operation.
There you go.
And then
she's going to wonder why I'm super gluing toothpicks to a popsicle stick.
It'll be fun. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much for being on our show, Dr. Theann. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for the invitation. This is awesome. I'm so happy that a podcast like this exists for kids. Great work. And again, thanks for the invitation.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dr. Theann.
Bye.
What a fantastic interview with Dr. Theann Griffith. I can't wait to hear about how our listeners take on her challenge about how we feel things.
I know, it was so great. And you know, I love talking about the brain. Of course, not only because I did my book, Brain Games, but Theann and I have had conversations about how cool the brain is when it works. Oh my gosh. So any of you guys out there who feel like you're gonna do our challenge and you wanna let us know, find us on solveitforkids.com. You can read all about the challenge. You can read all about other tricks and tips that you can use to see how your brain works. And then be sure to find us on our social media, Twitter and Instagram. We are at KidSolve. How cool is this? And next week, we want you to join us because we have another amazing episode of
Solve It for Kids.